So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review man.
Papa, Mr. Splash! Papa, Mr. Splash! He splashed the ladder! DDT on the ladder! Cover hooked the leg! They got him! They got him! Tommy Dreamer got revenge from Beulah!
Welcome to Reveal Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you. How are you, Wei?
I'm awesome.
No, you're not. You're exhausted.
Yeah.
You look like you just got through a heat wave.
Yeah.
You're sweating. You're glistening. Your hair is a little disheveled.
Well, I'm not that bad. It's just been a very busy day.
What day is it?
It's Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've got your faculties with you.
It is Wednesday, yeah. It's just there's just a lot going on all the time, all fights all the time,
all shooting all the time for you. It looks like
there's a lot of shooting.
What have you done over the past couple of days, going back to like this weekend? Because you were shooting on Saturday.
Yeah, Chris Weidman. Is it Weidman or
Weidman? Weidman.
It's not Weidman.
A lot of people have called him Weidman, but I believe it's Weidman.
Well, I like Weidman. So.
You know what I really hate in MMA is that like there will be a pronunciation for a long amount of time, and then people will just change it. And a lot of the times I find it's not the pronunciation people are so affected by. It's how a lot of these guys just enunciate. I mean, a lot of these guys have very thick accents.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pronounced – it's pronounced a certain way, but sometimes the enunciation gets in the way. And then we just get people that – it's like I don't care how people pronounce names, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So
– Anyway.
Well, what do you think about some of these, like, Brazilians' names?
Wow.
Like, come on.
It's like, it seems that there's some fights it's Ronaldo.
Hodger?
Hodger?
That's not a fucking name.
Yeah, it's like, when do you get to decide if we pronounce the R or not? I'll decide that. In this country where this fight's being promoted, R-O-G-E-R is Roger.
Roger. I mean, it's like, you know, if a Chinese person were to pronounce Roger... I'm not gonna do it. But like,
do it.
I'm not gonna do it
because you're not really coming through.
It'd be highly offensive. But no. I'm just saying, somebody says that name wrong, doesn't mean that's the name you should say. That doesn't mean. I'm just sorry. I'm just looking at your keyboard and.
Oh yeah. I've got. My mom did this for me.
Oh wow. Okay.
Well, I've worn out the letters, so it was just black keys. And my mom had this label maker and labeled the keys for me. One of them is missing.
You've worn out the printed letters on your laptop keyboard until your mom's gone ahead and put on the stickers of A.
They're labels.
W E. That's amazing.
Why isn't it weird that it's these ones that are all worn out and the others are fine? It's like there must be a high propensity of usage amongst these.
I think maybe one hand's creasier and. Dirtier than the other.
Maybe my left hand is the problem.
Could be. Anyway, so I mean, come on. Some names you just got to pronounce the way you want to pronounce them.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
So John Polak.
That's...
How are you?
So you're just intentionally trying to mispronounce it.
Actually, that's Polak. Polak is that right? Polak, then.
Pollock is fine.
No, because it's not pronounced... It doesn't look like Pollock. It would be L-I-C-K.
Okay, well... I don't even know how you would properly say your first name. It's not Way. It's not how you spell
sure
Way.
All right. Well, what do you want to call
Wah.
Me?
Wah. I.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Call me whatever you want. That's fine.
We were talking about what you were shooting, though. Chris Weidman on Saturday.
Chris Weidman on Saturday. Some Taekwondo stuff on Friday. Always something going on here in the studio. We just had the most insane Taekwondo demonstration this
crazy
afternoon.
You can watch it on my tout.
I can't even begin to describe it, but John saw it. It was crazy.
It's like these 14-year-olds who, they're from
Korean? They're the Korean representatives of Taekwondo, basically.
Yeah.
They're the best Taekwondo people.
That was crazy. I thought this was just like local Canadian Taekwondo practitioners. Well, and no, these guys are like world-renowned.
Do you know who the guy who was introducing him was?
Nope.
Master Tommy Chang.
The Master Tommy Chang?
The Master Tommy Chang. The same Tommy Chang who has his face plastered if you're ever in Toronto. There's this Taekwondo school that we've always passed by. It's up at Bloor and Ossington.
Yeah.
And it looks like the most campy looking, like, come here to join karate. And, like, the guy's plastered his face all over the front wall in his karate poses. It looks so funny. But that's... That's the guy. Apparently, he's been in a number of like B movies too.
Ooh, well, yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, so that was
it's really definitely nice, the nice most guy. Entertaining kind of fighting style I think to watch. Like that, like capoeira. I mean, no one's gonna go pay to watch some wrestlers do takedowns on one another.
Yeah. Even like jiu-jitsu, unless you know what's happening, it can be quite boring. But taekwondo, they're basically saying you can't do anything but kick, just kick.
But they do it really well.
Well, come on, like, yeah, kicking.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's good.
No stoppages, yeah, but...
When you were watching this, it was a part of you wishing, man, I wish for the last year I'd dedicated myself to Taekwondo instead. This would be way cooler to demonstrate to people.
Not really.
You could have been part of this today.
No.
Kicking boards and breaking them and...
No interest in that.
They were doing this one exercise where a guy was blindfolded and had to kick an apple with, like, a butter knife attached to it.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
How do you... Like, you have to try that for the first time if you're one of these. You practice and practice. That first time trying it, like, there's got to be some trial and error attached with this.
I imagine even before you do it blindfolded, like, you probably take baby steps. You know, before you put the apple on a knife, it's probably an apple on maybe a chopstick. And you obviously wouldn't do it blindfolded the first time. You've got to work your way up. And who knows, maybe he's going to work his way up from this point. Maybe he'll do it next time with...
A machete.
Sure, a machete.
A grenade.
Kick a grenade off.
A detonator.
Kicking a grenade off of a machete.
If you hit this place explodes.
Yeah. Sure.
That would be high entertainment.
Yeah. And maybe have like a Parkinson's disease sufferer holding the grenade.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That would be, I'm surprised this hasn't been on TV yet.
Well, he's still young.
He's
got to work his way up.
Taekwondo, don't try this at home. Coming to Spike TV this fall.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Fantastic. Anyway. What did you find Raw to be more... does Raw being live in Canada excite you after this past Monday?
No.
Did you still start at the same time of like 9 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Because...
I don't want to watch Raw live. I want it to be over earlier, so that's... I can start 15 minutes earlier now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I try. You and I are the same. We don't try not to watch the commercials to kind of make the whole process go a little faster. So we're watching on a delay anyway. It does allow us to start the show. We started at the same time actually.
Yeah, probably around that. Yeah. One of us is usually running late.
Yeah.
Last week I was way behind. You were ready to go, and I had like 30 minutes left to go. I was just like, I'm on the main event. And just started fast-forwarding quite a lot.
I don't mind.
Well, I felt that this past Monday's Raw moved faster than last week's. Last week's was just such a drag. But I found this week's was...
Why? You know, do you say that?
I just found this past Monday's didn't drag as much.
Because I didn't feel that way at all.
You thought it was dragging.
Yeah, I thought this week's was kind of even worse than last week's.
Oh. Well, there's some people who would argue that.
I just wasn't that happy towards the end when they, you know, kind of went through all that unnecessary stuff.
You saw Iron Man this past weekend. How was it?
I did. A lot of people have
asked. The third one. He didn't go back and watch the first.
Yeah, yeah. Iron Man 3. First of all.
It's getting a lot of, you know, not bad, but not great.
Yeah, that's how I felt. But first of all, I just want to say, like, I went on opening day. I wasn't even intending on going.
That's intense.
I went on opening day because I had the day off on Friday, and I had some time to kill during the day. So I was like, you know what? It's opening day. It's 1 o'clock. I don't think there's going to be a lineup there.
Yeah.
So I showed up. 5 minutes before the show. There was no lineup. It was only like only half the arena was full. I was watching it by myself, so like I was able to snag like a perfect seat in the center, 2 empty seats next to me. It was like the greatest thing. So the movie itself, yeah, it's not as good as the first Iron Man, which I think I considered to be the best.
I like the first one.
The best Marvel produced movie, even more so than the Avengers. I enjoyed that, but better than the second one.
I can't remember the second one for the life of me. Everyone is talking about how much the second one sucked. I can't remember it and I saw it.
It didn't suck. It was like it was again. It was a movie that was like it wasn't terrible, but like it was not memorable and didn't really wow anybody. Second one, I think like. Mickey Rourke was in it with the whip guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the whip guy. Iron Man 3 overall, though, it was fun. I think there were a lot of, like, plot holes that you would kind of have to just ignore, as, you know, you would with most of these movies. Like,
we're kind of trained for that, though.
With pro wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think, you know, with a movie like Iron Man, I mean, it deals with the post-Avengers kind of fallout. With Tony Stark and suffering from, like, PTSD. And so, you know, the whole time you're thinking, why wouldn't this guy, you know, there's a terrorist threat. Why wouldn't he just call the Avengers? Why wouldn't he just call Thor to, you know, destroy this dude?
Because they're in the middle of this whole Spider-Man controversy. They have enough on their plates without Iron Man's problems.
What are you talking about?
Well, right now in Superior Spider-Man, the Avengers, this is real time, right? This is all happening. I have to believe that this is all in sync.
No.
It's not?
It's completely different. Anyway, we're getting too sidetracked here.
I forgot to share this story from you at Ring of Honor. One of the people that came up to me, this guy was a police officer that listens all the time to us, and he was saying that you got him hooked on Saga.
Cool.
He tried out the comic. I think he got his wife to read it as well.
Nice.
So he was a big fan.
Oh, I think he talked to me. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did meet him. Yeah.
I didn't know he was a cop.
Yeah. He didn't appreciate some of our comments about our trips to court and misrepresenting the law in some cases. So I apologize for that.
Yeah.
We get very frustrated whenever we have to go to court.
Yeah, didn't he criticize us, or criticize, like, tell you that we really butcher a lot of the laws? Like that
yeah,
we
said,
about?
You guys kind of butcher the law, not your radio show, I mean the actual law. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that's where the fact-checking thread comes in.
Yeah. I don't know, he didn't cite an example, though, so. I can only react to what happens to me. I can't tell you if it's... if I'm assuming anything.
Well, it's good that we have a listener who's a member of the police force.
Very, very good to have.
Should you and I ever get in trouble, I mean, I can see that happening very in the near future.
When was the last time you went to court for something really? It's been a while for me since I've had to fight a ticket or something.
I had a cell phone thing. I had a cell phone ticket.
Oh, yeah. You are the only person I know that's gotten a cell phone ticket. Until you got that, I thought this was just some scare tactic.
No.
At least in Toronto, because I don't know of anyone who's gotten... caught for using their cell phone while driving.
Well, I mean, okay, in my defense, it's not like I was driving down the street holding my phone. I wasn't doing that. I was pulling over to pick up equipment from the Fight Network. I was on my way to pull over as somebody from the inside of the office called me to ask me where I was. So I'm on my way to pull over at the same time. Oh, God, I got this fucking phone buzzing in my pocket. I gotta, you know, it's really distracting. I gotta pick it up and answer it. So I pick it up and I just hit, like, the speakerphone so that I'm talking with it in my hand. I just so happened to pull up right next to, like, a meter maid.
Yep.
And she's just like, you know.
Bad timing on your
got
part.
Got you, I got you. Pretty much like that.
That's too bad. Yeah. So it's on speaker. You didn't even have it up to your ear.
No, but the law is that... Anyway,
yeah, it's got to be hands-free.
No,
right?
I don't even dare to mention it because our listener is going to really get on our case. But I believe, yeah, it's either hands-free or it has to be mounted on something, like a GPS.
Oh, well.
Yeah, shit happens. It's fine.
I've always taken issue with the seatbelt law.
What? Why? That's a great law.
I don't think it's necessary. I'm
the front seat.
I am all for laws that, you know, by my actions could hurt somebody else.
The cell phone law is a great law too.
Hey, I'm not knocking the cell phone. I don't think people should use it. Believe me, I've used my cell phone while driving and I've had some close calls where it's like I should not be doing these two things at the same time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. Seatbelt, the only person I'm putting at risk is myself. I think we've debated this before.
Oh, yeah, we have. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we had a long debate about this. Right. So my stance hasn't changed.
But the argument is that, you know, your car.
Your argument was that I could get crippled and then tax dollars have to support me.
Yes. That was it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, drugs are only harmful to you. So why are drugs illegal?
Well, that's why, I mean, to the greater extent, I mean, possession is not as severely... I think punished as dealing is.
No, it's not.
So, yeah, just there like, you go. I don't think the greater.
Just like a seatbelt law.
I don't have any problem if someone wants to use drugs. That's your problem.
Okay. Well, that's where our politics differ.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Yeah, and that's where you're wrong and I'm right.
You just outlawed drugs altogether. Hey, I'm not advocating that heroin's available at your corner store, but I just. If a guy is doing heroin, and if I were to walk down the street and see a guy doing heroin, your problem. It's not mine. You're not affecting anybody else. I don't care. Sure. It's like, you know, that might kill you.
You could be right, too. I mean, I was just joking. But, yeah, maybe the seatbelt thing, you know. You can wear it if you want.
Wear a seatbelt. Because I want to be safe. I don't want to die. But I'm just saying, if I chose not to, what is a penalty?
If you flew out of your car and into somebody and you knocked them unconscious?
I don't even think that's possible.
Sure it is.
To fly out of a car through a window and knock someone unconscious in another vehicle going through their window.
You fly out of a car and your head gets severed and the head goes into a child's stroller and suffocate. Anyway, kind of gruesome now, but head goes into the child's stroller, child becomes emotionally traumatized.
What if I ran my car off a bridge and landed near a rock somewhere that jams my seatbelt and I can't undo the seatbelt and try and swim above water? Oh, and I'm trapped by this fucking T going across my chest.
Right. Well, that's unlucky. Yeah.
It's unlucky. Yeah, I'm dead. Unlucky. That's very unlucky.
What's the inconvenience of putting on a seatbelt? Why, you know?
I'm just saying. It's like...
It makes me feel like I prefer to have a seatbelt on.
No one's stopping you. I'm not saying seatbelts should be outlawed. I'm just saying it should be your choice if you want to wear one or not.
Okay.
If you don't want to wear one, I would probably think, yeah, you're really taking a risk here. But you're taking the risk. Mm-hmm. I couldn't care less.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I agree with you, actually.
Oh, so yeah. I've won you over.
Yeah, you just...
So I think I should have an argument with you, and then a year and a half later, I'm just going to bring it up. And I can see in your eyes, like, not this shit again. I know how I'm going to get out of this. I agree with you. And you kill the momentum right there.
No, that's not true.
ECW, eh?
Yeah.
Did you like ECW?
Well, I mean, I never really got to watch much of it up here until the TNN days, and I never really followed it at that time. So, no.
This show, Heatwave, was voted best show of 1998 by the Wrestling Observer Newsletter.
I can see why.
It was just over a year since they had gotten onto pay-per-view, so they had a number of shows under their belt by this time, running in Dayton, Ohio at the Hera Arena. It was Sunday, August the 2nd of 1998. Mm-hmm. And let's just dive right into the show. One of the things about these ECW shows that it's so hard to find even a bad ECW show. Still usually, like 9 times out of 10, has a really hot crowd. Where it's like, even if I'm not enjoying it, I listen to this crowd being so hot, and it's like, I feel that the onus is on me. It's like, why am I not getting more into this? This crowd loves it. Yeah. This show's working. Whereas you might watch a great, you know, couple of matches, and the crowd's dead, and that really takes me out of it. But this, from start to finish, this was a crowd that loved this product, was invested in the majority of these characters, and this was one of the biggest positives of ECW, was that I don't think it even mattered what the matches were. You were going there to be part of this experience, that going to an ECW show in 1998 would be unlike any other wrestling show at the time, even a WWF show, a WCW show. It's like ECW was an experience. They were certainly selling you an experience, and it came across so well on pay-per-view and on television.
Absolutely. It really felt like the fans made the promotion, you know. And the show starts off really highlighting that. They start off these pay-per-views, like always, with Joey Styles alone in the ring, surrounded by this crowd. No flashy, you know, graphics or anything like that.
No voiceover. Actually, they would have video packages, which had some awesome voiceovers from them, courtesy of Paul Heyman.
Yeah, but just the show starts off Joey Styles alone in the ring, the sound of this crowd.
Like, chanting Joey.
Yeah.
It's like just the start of the show. They're pumped.
Just like, I don't know, like, they must have been serving a lot of coffee and alcohol.
Yep.
But, yeah, I wish I had the energy of these guys.
Yeah, this was a Sunday night show as well.
Wow.
And you could see immediately what time period this was, because in the front row, a guy's wearing a Tommy Hilfiger shirt.
People don't wear those anymore?
I never see them as much. They felt like they were really, really big in the, like, 96 to 2000. That was, like, this peak period. I even bought one.
Oh.
I bought this Tommy Hilfiger, like, polo shirt.
Yeah.
It was just ungodly ugly. It was, like, half of it was red, and half of it was, like, navy blue.
Wow.
And I spent $100 on this shirt.
Whoa.
And I went home and I was like, I'm gonna have to wear this shirt so many times. To $100 to me was like, felt like I had just bought a car.
Oh, it's still a bit.
It's crazy. I was 14 years old.
To this day, $100 is a lot for a shirt.
Yeah, it was stupid. I never would have paid that today for a shirt.
I imagine.
But I was a dumb 14 year old.
Yeah, when you're that age, you're kind of maybe just discovering fashion, you know, for the first time.
Doing it terribly.
We've all had our phases.
Did you ever have a funny phase of shit you wore? Because I look back at pictures where I wore, like, baggy pants and, like, it dyed my hair when I was, like, 15.
Flame shoes.
Oh, the flame shoes. Well, what, those are ugly?
No, I don't know. yeah, I'm sure I have. I mean, for the longest time, I just didn't care about, you know, how I dressed. And then
I love the fact that I went through these stupid phases where I can look back at, like, what a goof I was. Yeah. I look hideous.
Well, what if I asked you, hey, would you ever want a time machine so that you can go back and start your life over from I don't know, let's say 14? Would you want to do that?
No, I'm very happy.
I'm the
with
same
my,
way,
my
like
teenage years.
I'm the same way. I'm like, fuck no, I'll go through all that bullshit again. Like, come on, I'm pretty fine where I am now. I wouldn't want to go back there.
Do you ever get were you a popular kid in school?
No, not at all. Not really. No. I was like, why are we having this conversation?
I'm just curious. I've never asked you this. It's tough way, all these podcasts, to try and
you
learn
know,
new things about
I
you.
I was not. I was more like, I don't know, kind of like, I had my tiny group of friends, and, I just mainly, like, kind of kept to myself for the most part. But then, like, in the last year of school, I kind of became popular because I ended up being a contestant. I was on the trivia club. I was on, like, the trivia
really?
Team. Yeah.
Was it called W5H?
No, it wasn't that.
That was our trivia thing.
Oh, we were a part of, what the fuck was that? Reach for the Top?
Oh, yeah. This was in high school or elementary school?
High school.
High school, yeah.
We did that. In addition, we also...
And you became a high school celebrity here?
Well, hold on. We also applied to this show on the CBC called Smart Ask.
Yeah, I'm totally familiar with it. I think I tried out for this team in high school and I didn't get on it.
Anyway, so yeah, we got
Smart Ask. I totally remember.
We got on Smart Ask on the CBC.
Whoa!
And who's the host?
Oh, it was
The Nobu, Mio and Nobu.
I can't remember.
These two, like,
was the guy from JohnOvision involved in it?
No.
Maybe I'm confusing things, son.
No, like Mio and Adelman. Mio and Nobu Adelman. Adelman. They were the host. And,
fuck,
actually,
you should try and remember when this was, because CBC, I bet you could, get it. You have the tape?
Yeah.
Shit!
Anyway.
Oh, man.
Anyway, we got on the CBC, and, we were in a number of, matches, and we made it to, like, the, pretty, like, far. We made it to, like, the semifinals. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of gained some notoriety.
Do you remember any questions?
Yeah.
That you nailed?
Oh yeah. I was like, one of them was like the pop culture one. I just happened. I was like the pop culture guy, and like the question was what province is the band Wide Mouth Mason from? And then I was like, Saskatchewan. I stuttered my way through it, but I got it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was in elementary school we had the W5H team, and it was I was the captain of the team in grade 7 and 8. We did like tryouts once, and I just started dating this girl. And the tryouts are with everyone in the room there. And I'm just sat there and I nailed like 18 questions in a row, just buzz, answer.
Wow.
And I thought I was like king shit here answering all these 18. W5H questions.
Whoa, yeah, you are.
So I got to be the captain. We didn't win anything, but that was it.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have had a career in that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You and I.
What kind of questions?
The trivia tandem. I could do any sports questions. Yeah, pop culture stuff I was good at. We had this guy, Vincent. He was our math guy. And then...
Yeah, that's the important thing. You got to be well-rounded. You got it. You got to have, you know, your pop culture.
Yeah, well, we had like a team of five, and everyone kind of had their thing.
You got to have your math and sciences person. You got to have the English and poetry person.
Yeah.
Sports guy.
This guy, Vince, he would hit the buzzer, and for the math question, he'd literally write it out in midair as he's answering it, and he'd do it in like 2 seconds, like these crazy, like fucking algebra questions.
Oh, yeah.
And it was intense.
It was
these
fun.
Things were such a rush because it's like, fuck, we'd be facing another school, and you had to have the how to buzz accurately, and there was like, we would actually practice buzzing right as we could hear the question and cut off the other team. Like, we had strategy.
I remember it being a big deal that we were able to buy practice buzzers, like a practice buzzer system that actually lit up.
Yeah, we broke ours 1 year. Yeah, really? Just practicing.
It was,
it screwed up our preparation the week of because they had to go get these fixed.
Do you guys have a name? Like, or is it just the name of the school?
No, we were just Blessed Trinity. No, this was elementary school.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's dive into this. God, Tommy Hilfiger shirt.
Such nerds.
We've got a broadcast partner for Joey Styles for this pay-per-view. They bring out Shane Douglas in his jorts.
Was he wearing jorts?
He was wearing jorts with his mullet, along with Francine, who was wearing very, very little.
Yeah, the crowd is chanting, "Show your tits."
She basically was.
Yeah, you could pretty much see them clearly.
Shane had a brace on his right arm, so obviously could not work this show. And Joey says that his suit is double-breasted, just like Francine. So Francine responds by grabbing Joey's face and shoving it into her chest.
Yeah.
This was like sexual harassment here, kind of, self-inflicted.
Well, I mean, just like you can't really be racist to white people, you can't really sexually harass a man.
Oh, there's some interesting logic. So that's how the show started, and then we did get an opening with the greatest font boards you've ever seen, with the classic ECW like bubble letters that would pop up from side to side.
Yeah, and
the graphics are just the absolute shit.
So bad, and the Heatwave logo, it's like the you know, there's like a Chinese restaurant font that's like you know, the triangles, like it's supposed to look like strokes. This was definitely a Mexican restaurant font, like a Heat Wave. It's like any Mexican restaurant I've been to has like Mexican Fiesta written with this type of Heat Wave font.
It was just there's low budget and there's no budget, and this was bordering on no budget.
It was extreme in how extremely low budget this TV production was. But, you know, like in hindsight, that was kind of the part of the charm of
it was like this kind of promotion that was just flew by the seat of its pants with like rubbing a couple quarters together to try and put on a pay-per-view.
Exactly.
It was the feel it gave
it
you.
It was cheap, but you can tell that a lot of heart was and a lot of love was put into it because it was probably a small group of people working in Paulie's basement just doing this on their own.
See, I think this kind of product today in this kind of technological world, I think this would be just the laughing stock. Well, I don't think this could really... Look at Ring of Honor and their TV show where it's just... There's no charm attached to that.
The problem is, like, and I think ECW experiences it too, when they were going up against the, you know, WWE and WCW. I mean, you know, trying to cater this product to an audience that's been conditioned their whole lives to watch Raw. Like, I mean, WWE has the production value of, like, they can beat any sports production out there. Like, they're super top notch, and to have somebody working out of their basement to kind of go head to head with that is near impossible. And I can understand, as a casual viewer, watching that and then watching something like ECW and seeing this shitty looking opening video, it could be enough to turn somebody off. A lot of people.
Justin Credible comes out with his group with Nicole Bass, Chastity, and Jason. And Styles says that we should call Bass Russia because she's much bigger than China. He had a lot of those lines throughout this show. And Justin Credible and Jerry Lynn were our opening match, the finals of the Summer Series. Not to be confused with the Bellator Summer Series, which is going to kick off in a couple of weeks.
I didn't confuse that. No.
And Styles announces, whoever wins this match wins the feud. What a simple concept. This will be the feud winner.
Yeah.
And big chops by both to start off the match. Credible goes for his That's Incredible tombstone that Lynn reverses, gets a two count. There's a big high cross to the floor by Jerry Lynn. Then Jason holds a chair that Credible runs into Lynn's head with in the corner. And then match continues. Jason and Bass start double-teaming Jerry Lynn on the floor behind the referee's back. And at one point, Justin Credible grabs a plastic cup of beer from a fan and just sends it into Lynn's head. Plastic cup to the head.
No. Yeah.
These are the headshots I can stomach. There was a top rope Hurricane Rana by Jerry Lynn for a two count. Jerry Lynn was just working at an insane pace in this match. Yeah. Lynn comes off the top into a powerbomb by Credible. Then a chair is tossed in to Credible, but Lynn stops him, hits a DDT on the chair, but Chastity puts Credible's foot on the bottom rope. Then Lynn sets a table up on the floor, hits a Hurricane Rana from the top rope to the floor, putting Credible through. Now, remember, in ECW, there were no mats on the floor, so this was just going through the table to the cement. I can't believe they pulled this one off so cleanly. Like, either guy could have died here.
Yeah.
And this was the opening match, no less. Mm-hmm. But this crowd went insane here for this spot.
Mm-hmm.
Chastity then distracts the referee, and Jason attacks, but Lynn powerbombs Jason. Bass then attacks Lynn. He comes back, low blows Nicole Bass, and then
she sells it.
Yeah. And then Lynn hits Bass with a chair shot to the back for a big pop, but then Credible holds him. Lynn leaps as Chastity hits a low blow to Justin Credible by mistake. Lynn hits a tombstone to Chastity, and then Lynn goes for the top rope Hurricane Rana. It's blocked, and Credible hits That's Incredible off the second turnbuckle. This was like right out of Chris Benoit would do this quite a lot in New Japan. And Credible gets the pin at 14:37. Hell of an opener here. This was like a main event match.
Yeah, these two had a great match, made even 10 times better because of this crowd. Incredible spots throughout the whole thing.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, please. And Jerry Lynn looking fantastic. Justin Credible looking fantastic. I mean, you know, you watch this match, and then you just see how this crowd is treating these guys, and you just kind of contrast that with their WWE run, because I'm sure these guys had a match with each other maybe there. And, like,
the best of Jacked. Soon to be released.
Best of the 2-minute Jacked and Heat matches between Justin Credible and Jerry Lynn. I mean, you know.
These were two guys that went nowhere when WWE picked them up.
But here, these two were treated like gods.
And and like 2 years after this, they'd be feuding for the ECW title kind of during the downfall of the company right at the end.
But I mean, so clearly all these guys on the show have something great that connects with an audience, something great that's able to, you know, allow them to put on performances like this. But so much of the environment and the context and the people surrounding them were just not there.
Our next matchup featured a video package to set it up with the feud between Lance Storm and Chris Candido, who were tag team champions and then broke up after losing the titles to Sabu and Rob Van Dam. And Heyman was doing the voiceover here, and just, boy, did he make me excited to see this match.
Chris Candido and Lance Storm were, quite possibly, the the most technically proficient tag team that ECW has ever had the honor of promoting as the World Tag Team Champion. They took on all comers. They backed down from no team. Candido and Storm did everything within their power to elevate the World Tag Team titles to unheard of heights until they ran up against the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal, death-defying tag team of Sabu and Mr. Monday Night, Rob Van Dam, who beat Candido and Storm for the belts, sending Storm, a protege of Stu Hart's dungeon, into an inexplicable pepper can. Storm smacked Chris Candido on his headgear that was protecting his left ear that was ripped off of his head by Sabu and Van Dam in Boston, Massachusetts. Storm walked out on his tag team partner at the world infamous ECW Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Candido fell victim once again to Sabu and Van Dam. Storm has made a stand. He double-crossed Candido and at night he thinks it's amusing.
He describes Candido having part of his ear torn off and Lance smacking him in the side of the head where he was wearing like the ear protectors that like you'll see in amateur wrestling, and Heyman just made this sound like the most vile act of cruelty a man has ever administered on another.
He was good, yeah.
This was very intense.
He's a good on-air guy, yeah.
So Lance Storm, Chris Candido, Douglas says, what did he say here? Anyway, Candido comes out to Back in Black, and he's joined by Tammy Sitch, who I think had just left the WWF at this point.
Was that right?
And Douglas says it's a good idea to have a good set of boobs and a nice ass out there as advice for Candido as Francine sits there with him. And Sitch does Candido's introduction, and they explain that Candido had plastic surgery for his torn ear after that match with Sabu and RVD. And Sitch notes that Chris Candido is 240 of the hardest pounds she's ever felt.
Okay.
Very graphic.
Yeah.
Storm catches him with a spinning heel kick, and then he goes for a leapfrog as the match begins. A lot of chops here, and then tears the headgear off of Candido and hits a high cross to the floor, which everyone was going with in this show. A lot of high crosses to the floor. Candido hit a running tiger bomb, got a two count, delayed vertical suplex, and Candido was taking most of the match here as Storm was selling, and they had Candido pretty well playing the babyface until he blocked a suplex, hit a vertical suplex with Candido going to the floor. This looked incredibly painful, and then took a baseball slide and a springboard crossbody into the crowd by Storm. Storm came back with a sit-out powerbomb for a two count. Then Tammy passes powder over to Candido. Storm knocks it into Candido's face, blinding him, and then accidentally hits referee Jim Molino and Storm with a super kick. Storm then goes for a moonsault, but Tammy comes into the ring and starts groping Lance's ass and crotches him on the top rope. And somehow in this whole back and forth, Tammy Sitch's dress gets torn, and the crowd gets to their feet in anticipation for tits on a pay-per-view. But she was covered up. Candido hit a super powerbomb to Lance off the top, and he got the pin at 11 minutes, and this was called the Blonde Bombshell, he named the super powerbomb off the top rope to get the win.
Another really good match. I thought both men, they were kind of billing this as, like, you know, the battle between the two best technicians, in-ring technicians in ECW, and certainly, you know, you watch both guys, and especially Lance here, just moving so incredibly smooth and, you know, just so fluid, and you watch it, and it's just cool to watch and study. I will say, though, maybe sometimes it appeared a little too fluid to the point where it felt a little too perfect and almost like more like gymnastics than a real fight.
Right.
Sometimes. But overall, still a match I quite enjoyed.
They go back to the announce desk with Styles, Douglas, and Francine just sat there the whole time. She never needed to talk. She just sat there with them for the whole show.
Yeah.
Just kind of boring, I would think, like just to sit there with them. I hope she had a monitor to at least watch the show on.
I mean, that's why they hired.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Styles gets an update about a parking lot incident from earlier in the night, and then they cut to it with New Jack. This was held earlier in the day. New Jack's with a bunch of fans outside saying how he's going to whoop Jack Victory's ass tonight in a weapons match. And then Jack Victory shows up, and then the Dudleys arrive by car, and they go after New Jack. Axel gets involved. Balls Mahoney gets involved. John Cronus was there. It's this crazy brawl outside as the fans are going nuts. And New Jack gets laid out as Axel is yelling for help. And then Styles explains that the weapons match has been canceled tonight between these two, stemming from this parking lot brawl.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing someone was hurt. Something went on here. But both would get involved later on in the show.
You just to talk about anytime Joey Styles would talk in the arena, they almost mix it so that you can barely hear him because they mix the crowd noise.
Yeah, that was really, always like a staple of these shows, was like really turning up the crowd. And
yeah,
it was like he had to shout to pretty much be heard. Mm-hmm. Here.
It's an interesting effect.
Rob Van Dam and Sabu are in the back with Bill Alfonso. They cut a promo on their opponents tonight, Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki, with RVD just playing like the greatest, like, dick.
Yeah.
Like, just a total dick here who's trying to outshine Sabu. They're doing the whole odd couple gimmick here. They've won the tag titles. He's just getting his digs in on Sabu. And then, as Bill Alfonso says, Hakushi, Van Dam says that as he sneezes. Like, yeah. Hakushi.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Hilarious.
His WWF name.
Van Dam was just a great heel here. You just hated this guy. One of those guys you just, like, that you would see at, like, a nightclub or something. Someone you just instantly hate when you
was
see him.
Was he a
them.
Heel, though?
He was, I mean, the crowd was, like, into him, but he was, like, he was portraying a heel here. He was a guy who was, you know, wanting to jump to WWF. He's calling himself Mr. Monday Night. So he was kind of playing this heel character,
so
but the crowd
actually,
was really
was
taking to
him. Was he a good heel then?
Well, it was different rules at this point. I thought he was a great heel, personally. We go to a match that these two were kind of defined by each other's careers throughout their time in ECW. It would be a title program about a year or so after this, but their first pay-per-view meeting, Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka. And I've got to say, this past weekend, I watched the New Japan Pro Wrestling iPay-Per-View featuring Masato Tanaka still doing matches like this. He took on Tomoaki Hanma this past weekend. And it's just, I don't know how this guy has lasted. And I wrote in my report, it's either a blessing or a curse that this guy can still pull off matches like this at his age. Like, it's insane, dude.
Does he still take chair shots to the head?
No, not to this degree, but he's still like, works some crazy shit,
yeah.
Like some very, very physically hard matches. And watching this, I have a feeling a lot of people would have thought this was like one of the greatest matches they had ever seen in 98. I just have such a hard time watching these kind of matches, especially knowing, you know, with Mike Awesome, here's a guy that, I mean, it's hard not to think that there was some kind of link to this guy eventually committing suicide and seeing all the head trauma this man took. But if you were a fan of these hard-hitting matches, I mean, this was it for you. These guys went nuts for 12 minutes.
Yeah, I understand, and I can see why, especially in hindsight, in doing the research that you do every day, like, this would be hard to watch.
It's just with some matches, like, I find when I watch Misawa matches now, it's like,
yeah,
this guy died from, like, landing on his neck one too many times, and he ended up like rupturing part of his like neck. And it's like, and you watch some of those suplexes now, I can't watch them the same way I did, you know, originally.
Totally.
Like, it's just kind of in the back of your head. These two, for what it was here, the crowd just loving this. He clotheslines Tanaka to the floor early on and then hits a tope over the top to the floor. Just incredible to watch here. Way, like, here's a 280-pound guy, that's just, I mean, his agility and his style was, it's amazing that the WWF didn't grab this guy because he seemed like someone that, had the big size they loved and could work a very different style that maybe in the bigger promotions he would have been limited and they wouldn't have wanted him to work. But for ECW, I mean, he was a giant here amongst these wrestlers where that size really didn't translate when he went to WCW.
Yeah, nor the WWF.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't even think of him in WWF, really.
Exactly.
That's just
But, you know, yeah, there's something about him seeing this, just the visual of this matchup of, you know, this tall, high-flying dude with a mullet taking on this short, tiny Japanese guy, taking these intense chair shots to the head. It's such a odd dynamic, but the two of them just had such great chemistry together.
Yeah. They did these dueling chair shots as they were both on the floor with Tanaka winning out and then sending Awesome into the barricade. There's a springboard cross body into the crowd by Awesome as he cleared the barricade to the floor. Then he hit an Awesome bomb for a two count in the ring. Then an Alabama slam and a frog splash for another two count. Then Awesome grabbed the chair, two just huge chair shots to the head that Tanaka just pops up from and then hits a third one to the head. And this chair was like, if it was like a silhouette, you wouldn't even guess it was a chair. Like, it was just so bent up in like this ridiculous fashion. He hit a running Awesome bomb across the ring. Then he jumps off the top with a chair shot after setting up a table on the floor as the crowd just roars. Awesome has the table set up on the floor. He goes for the Awesome bomb to the floor, but Tanaka gets off of his back and then he lifts Awesome, power bombs him over the top rope through the table on the floor to chance of holy shit. Tanaka puts him into the ring. Awesome kicks out at two, hits a running elbow to Awesome, and then the roaring elbow for another near fall, and finally hits a tornado DDT to Awesome on top of two chairs for the win at 11:51. If you like these style of matches, then this was a great match. Very, very hard-hitting match, and this crowd, I think, was just so into this. And, these two would just have a number of these style of matches in ECW and then at One Night Stand eventually.
Yeah, I really like these style of matches. I think, you know, you're really, it's like, you can watch a football game and, you know, these guys are doing damage to their skulls as well, but you got to put that aside kind of and forget about that if you can. For you, it's probably very difficult.
No, listen, this was a match that got over tremendously well. You can't say, you know, this didn't work for this crowd. They loved it.
Yeah, I like this match so much. It almost makes me say, hey, just hit each other in the head. Go for it. For a chair shot to the head. Very entertaining. But these guys, like the two of them, you just got the sense that they didn't really give a fuck.
No.
I'm going to do whatever you want to me, then I'm going to dive over the top rope through the barricade and onto the crowd. And they just went at it, and it was very entertaining. I do. One thing I want to note is that, remember like when Mike Awesome did that just like springboard dive from the top rope to the inside of the barricade?
Yeah.
I just love that, you know, in ECW, often they would stick to the wide shot for things like this. Whereas in the WWE, I just absolutely hate it when, you know, sometimes they cut to a close-up when a guy's just jumping. But, you know, whenever you do something from a distance, and this goes for, like, kind of choreography as well, but especially when people dive off the top, you should always stick to the wide shot to convey the distance.
Yeah.
And then cut on the impact. And that's something I always thought they did well in ECW, was kind of let that breathe in the wide shot before cutting to close-up on impact.
Taz was in the back with his Fuck the World title and cuts a promo on Bam Bam Bigelow. This was coming off of the Living Dangerously show that was held earlier that year in Asbury Park, New Jersey, where Bigelow won the television title from Taz. And, I mean, Taz losing was such a rarity at the time that it was a really, really big deal, and was this was kind of Bigelow's last big run here, was in ECW, and he would shortly after this show return or go to WCW, which is where he would stick around for the rest of his career. But this was kind of his last kind of big push in any kind of company.
Yeah, a good promo by Taz.
Yeah, says he's the only real champion on pay-per-view, unlike Austin, Goldberg, and Mike Tyson.
Huh.
And the fans believe this.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, absolutely. Taz, fuck up Mike Tyson.
I think, though, this promo could have used a few more jokes, maybe more discussions about pigeons.
Yeah, arguing about what the word fickle means. Yeah, lots of stuff. by the way, I don't know if you've heard Dan's recap of the Joker's Wild pay-per-view, but it's like the setup for this is like they were doing two or three of these pay-per-views per day, and it's today and Taz. So they have no storylines either, because these are just timeless pay-per-views that they've got to call.
Yeah.
So it's way more jokes than usual. And there's one spot where a guy runs into, like, I think the barricade, and Tanay is like, oh, he runs into the wall. Man, I ran into a wall 40 minutes ago on this pay-per-view. Like, just openly saying, like, we're just fucking exhausted.
Oh,
this-
I thought a five-hour energy plug was coming.
No, no. He says, I hit a wall 40 minutes ago.
Oh, okay.
And there was no five-hour energy plug.
I just imagine. That's so amusing to me, because I'm just picturing Dan Lavransky typing all this.
Yeah. He did not like this show.
Yeah.
So there. If you download The Law from this past weekend, Law Extra has a recap of Mouth Uncensored recapping the Joker's Wild pay-per-view that he not only watched, but captioned, which to me is one of the greatest stories of all time, is Mouth having to caption this event, yep. Not by choice. Anyway, so Taz cuts this promo. They plug the November to Remember pay-per-view, which is their next one, in New Orleans. And you can also call and get a free ECW catalog.
Catalog of what?
Boy.
Like merch?
Like a merchandise catalog. Okay. We will send you a free book to order shit. Thanks. This is like pre-website even for this company. They throw to the Dudleys in the back, and Joel Gertner is with the Dudleys, with sign guy, Big Dick Dudley, talking about the Dudleyville street fight for later tonight against the Sandman, Tommy Dreamer, and Spike Dudley. And Bubba cuts this very heavily religious promo on Dreamer being crucified, and the 3D is their cross tonight. And then we went to what was a big match at the time. A lot of people excited about this one. Rob Van Dam and Sabu defending the tag titles against Jinsei Shinzaki and Hayabusa, which is a bit of a dream match at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Shinzaki comes out with Styles explaining known to wrestling fans as Hakushi. And they set up the fact that if Shinzaki and Hayabusa were to win the tag titles, there will be a rematch in Japan. I think just to give people the, you know, the idea that, you know, they could win the tag titles here. Conceivably.
That's great.
Interesting here that Joey Styles thanking Mike Johnson, Tim Whitehead, and Zach Arnold for doing research.
No.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's great.
And sending him 18 hours of video footage on Shinzaki and Hayabusa.
Oh, wow.
This is how you did, you do research back in the day in 1998. Mm-hmm. Didn't have YouTube. Didn't have all these outlets to go to.
Yeah. And Douglas mentions it off the top, but, you know, he's kind of really setting up how these guys, Hayabusa and Jinsei, were mirror images of RVD and Sabu. And, you know, you especially notice that in Hayabusa and Sabu. I mean, like, even their pants are the same.
Oh, yeah. I always thought Sabu was, like, just directly influenced right down to the last four letters of Busa.
Yeah.
You can spell Sabu. That was always my theory that I've never heard any actual confirmation
sure.
on.
But I mean, come on, dude! The shiny parachute pants with the sash belts—you don't.
Well,
just,
that part
you don't just pick that up at the Winners.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. MC Hammer maybe had some influence on Sabu. He had those big pants.
Okay.
That's the only other way.
Good.
Pajama pants.
Hammerbusa.
Hammerbusa. That could have been it. Van Dam and Sabu argue over who's going to start. Fuck. Bill Alfonso, I mean, a lot of people enjoyed this guy, but that fucking whistle by 30 seconds into this match,
yeah,
it was like, fuck.
I hate it.
It was killing me. Hayabusa comes off the ropes and messed up a spot, and immediately the crowd gets on Hayabusa. No yeah. love here for the invited guest. Almost, you fucked up, Chance.
I mean, I wonder if he understood that.
No, probably not. You know, it would be funny if he, like, played to it. Like, thank you.
But, I mean, yeah, much like Sabu. A great high flyer in Hayabusa, but often kind of sloppy.
Yeah, maybe he thought they were referencing, like, Van Damme being high or something.
You fucked up?
You fucked up in the head.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. He's trying to piece together crowd chants.
Yep.
Hayabusa slaps Sabu on the apron and then walks over, and Shinzaki at this point just walks in. No tag, just walks in here. Shinzaki did the old school rope scale with a chop onto Van Dam.
Yeah, but see, when Shinzaki does it, he does it like speed walking.
Yeah.
And
it's the difference of having knees that are functioning.
Right. And he walks around the corner. He walks around the whole rope and then around the corner.
90-degree turn.
Yeah.
Sabu attacked the left leg of Hayabusa to ground him into a heel hook to Hayabusa, who made the ropes. It was a camel clutch by Sabu. They fought into the crowd, where Sabu hit a dive off the top into the audience onto all three. There was a twisting leg drop by Van Dam to Hayabusa, who was draped on the barricade. Just tons of spots here. We saw a poetry in motion here by Sabu and Van Dam here.
Didn't they come up with that before the Hardys?
I don't know if the Hardys were doing that in Omega, but I mean, they were doing like TV jobs at the time for WWF in this time, so I doubt they had done it in WWF at this point. So Maybe they did get it from them here. Springboard senton and then a springboard knee and a quebrada by Hayabusa, all to Van Dam, getting a two count. Sabu hit a top rope Hurricane Rana, and then Van Dam followed with a splash off the top out of nowhere to get a two count on Shinzaki. Pele kick by Van Dam to Shinzaki. Then there was a power bomb to Shinzaki and a 450 splash by Hayabusa to get a two count. Just tons of near falls here. Lots of big spots building up to the finish here. Hayabusa got crotched on the top rope and got hit with a Van Daminator. And then a dragon screw leg whip was delivered to Van Dam. They tried to do a spot on one table. It broke. And then Hayabusa just hit a splash to Van Dam onto a flattened table for a two count. Then there was a Van Daminator to Shinzaki. They put both men on the table, and Sabu and Van Dam hit a double leg drop, putting both men through the tables, and then Sabu steals the pin, 20 minutes, 51 seconds, and they retain the tag titles.
I always thought, wouldn't it have been embarrassing? Okay, so the last part is there's one table, and both Hayabusa and Jinsei are laid out on the table at each end, and each guy would dive through. To each guy. But wouldn't it have been embarrassing if they both went for the same guy and they collided into each other?
Yeah, that would have been brutal.
It would have been funny.
This match, I mean, at the time, and a lot of people look back at this and call it like one of the greatest matches ever, which I don't think it's anywhere near that. But, you know, this was certainly a dream match at the time because of the styles and just being such a fresh match, and Van Dam and Sabu really at their peak in terms of a popularity at the time.
I mean, if you're a fan of these two guys, if you're a fan of any of these four guys, to kind of see them all involved in the same match and working together, it really is a dream scenario. I thought it was a really good match. I mean, you know, greatest match of all time. What does that even mean?
It's a match that's very romanticized.
But I still thought it was really good. It just like definitely at a point there, this match just like hit the gears, and all of a sudden it was like big move after big move.
Yeah.
It was almost as if like the finishing sequence lasted 10 whole minutes.
Yeah, let's just keep topping stuff and try to do crazy shit, and it's just kind of numbing at a certain point.
It is numbing, but it was, it was good too, depending on, you know, what type of thing that you like. But this crowd certainly, much like the other matches, like this, they never really rested at all.
Yeah, and that's something to always keep in mind too, is that, you know, this show is designed for this audience in this year for that time period, and I mean, it got over tremendously well, and that's how you've got to look at some of these events of like who it's aimed for at the time and put that into context. They're a video on Taz and Bam Bam Bigelow following Bigelow putting Taz through the ring at the Asbury Park show, which is funny because Terry Taylor in that Forever Hardcore documentary says that they just blatantly stole that spot years later for The Undertaker and Big Show, with Big Show chokeslamming Undertaker through the ring on Raw. And Taylor's like, oh yeah, I just took that. It was great and Big Show could use it. He said like, no shame. Like, you know, we want to put our spin onto it. It's like, no, we took it. Yeah, we stole that. It was great. And anyway, Bigelow wins the television title. They shook hands afterwards, but then Bigelow loses the TV title to Rob Van Dam, which started his historic television title run. And Douglas injures his arm at the hands of Taz, and it sets up this angle where Taz has to go through Bam Bam Bigelow to get to Shane Douglas. And this was kind of Taz's march to the world title inside of ECW and graduating from the TV title level. And Douglas just freaks out over this video airing. Styles says that Taz made Bigelow tap in a television match, but John Finnegan never saw it, as Douglas is yelling at him. And we go to the match here. Styles repeatedly calls Taz the most miserable son of a bitch in the world. And they explain that this match, it's falls count anywhere, and it's a fight to the finish. And the crowd, you could feel, was just buzzing for this match. Like, they had built these two monsters up quite a lot, and it just shows you how over Taz was at that point and how well that Living Dangerously match got over. Like, this was a rematch that people were just dying to see.
Mm-hmm.
Very rare you get it this time, of just like a match having that special feel to it. Bigelow hits a power bomb to Taz right away, and Taz just pops right up and then hits two lariats to drop Bigelow. They fight on the ramp. Bigelow goes into the crowd, and Taz just jumps at him, gets caught by Bigelow and driven into the barricade. They continue to fight through the crowd. Taz gets hit with a guardrail. He applies the Taz mission that Bigelow breaks with a jawbreaker. Then they finally make it back to ringside, where Bigelow leaps over the guardrail, and it looks like he lands, like stomps Taz upon landing right in the face, and his eye starts swelling up here at this point and was also bleeding. He power bombs Taz in the ring, brings in a table. Irish whips Taz into the table after setting it up in the corner. Taz is comes back with a T-bone suplex, and then Bigelow goes for a superplex on the ramp. Taz reverses it and ends up DDTing Bigelow, and they go through the ramp, which is like the elevated ramp you see a lot. Impact uses today. WCW used to have the elevated ramp, and they go right through this ramp. And the crowd just all to their feet go nuts here for this. They're chanting, holy shit. Bigelow is the first to emerge. Then Taz gets up, jumps on Bigelow's back, and applies the Taz mission. And Bigelow taps out at 13:24. And Shane is just so over the top, like with this overly dramatic call. And
he didn't tap. His eyes, his hands were reaching for the ropes.
No. And he argues that Bigelow was trying to reach for the ropes, even though they explained this was a no rules match. And afterwards, Taz gets
reaching the ropes from the outside.
From the outside, yeah. Yes. I don't know how that works. And then Taz tells Shane on the mic, beat me if you can, survive if I let you. And Shane freaks out, throws his headset and monitor, and leaves the booth with Francine.
Yeah. Taz's style was just so entertaining to watch. You know, just this tiny guy who, not for one second do you feel like this guy is ever too small going up against Bam Bam Bigelow, because everything he does looks believable. He's a short, stocky guy with a low center of gravity, and he's able to lift dudes twice or three times as big as him. You totally buy that. Bigelow seems to be used to really good effect here in ECW, portraying, you know, this agile big monster, as opposed to, you know, like fighting Lawrence Taylor in the WWF, but it really feels like in ECW he was able to live up to his full potential. And then that DDT through that ramp was just amazing, you know? Like, I remember that as one of the first things I've ever seen about ECW that really caught my attention, you know? And it's that type of out-of-the-box creativity that, you know, despite having a low budget, they were able to come up with ideas and impressive visuals like that to get people noticing their product. And for me, at least, this was something that really caught my attention.
Yeah, a great visual. And Heyman just always had a knack for getting big guys over and knowing how to present them, whether it was Bigelow or 9-1-1 or Big Show. I mean, he had such a great track record of being able to really get those big guys over as big men within those promotions. The main event is then set up here with the Dudleys breaking Beulah McGillicuddy's neck on television with a 3D, and they aired this really campy video with Tommy Dreamer and these roars of anger. It was just...
No.
It was so lame. Styles calls...
No, I thought it was fine. I mean, it did the job.
Oh, okay.
This guy's wife was getting beaten up, or girlfriend, or whatever.
Styles is just so disgusted at the Dudleys. He calls them scumbags. Defends Paul Heyman keeping them in the company because they draw money, and he's not going to be objective during this match because they make him sick to his goddamn stomach. Joey will not have any of this from these assholes. And Joel Gertner comes out along with the whole Dudley crew, Sign Guy, Big Dick, the Dudley boys, and Bubba cuts a promo on hating everybody in this crowd, and Sign Guy has all these signs, including one, my favorite, was, real Sunday Night Heat. And what was funny is because on August 2nd was the night that Sunday Night Heat debuted on the USA Network. The very first episode of Sunday Night Heat went head to head with this pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Bubba challenges everyone, whether they're in the WWF or WCW or in this arena. Another sign that Sign Guy has, Marks Fear Bubba. And he says to one fan that he was with his mother last night. And then Gertner does his intro saying he's hotter than a heat wave and harder than Chinese algebra.
Is it hot in here or is it just me? Well, well, well. Dayton, Ohio. Amazing where people can live these days. It is I, the man your mother warned you about, the man that makes your panties moist, and the only man that matters, hotter than a heat wave and harder than Chinese algebra, the quintessential stud muffin myself. Joel, I always leave them sore, yet they keep coming back for more. Gertner.
And
what? What does that mean?
He's very erect.
No, what the hell is Chinese algebra?
I imagine it's tougher than English algebra.
Algebra's okay. Is it? What the hell's English algebra?
I don't know. These are his words.
I'm gonna look this up.
Okay.
Anyway.
He then introduces the extreme referee, Jeff Jones, who is now the main PR guy for Ring of Honor. Man who was with us on Saturday night at the Ted Reeve Arena.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they have this blow-up doll who he introduces as the trashiest prostitute, Beulah McGillis slutty.
Right. Well, okay. Well, hold on a second, just a detour. Apparently,
okay, back to Chinese algebra.
Chinese algebra is a line from a Tom Waits song.
It's not an actual thing.
Well, it's a hard, very hard type of math is what it is. So, there you go.
It's like algebra, but it's Chinese.
Yeah.
So, they introduced the blow-up doll. Sign Guy is there with a torn ACL, the innovator of silence. Then he introduces Big Dick Dudley, whose attributes include tearing a Guinness Book of Records in half, wrestling's only real mastodon, who can beat up Ripley, believe it or not.
Yeah. I gotta say... Man, this
you weren't a fan of the Gertner character.
This whole fucking intro that they did with the Dudleys, it took forever.
Yeah.
It was like the 10-minute intro.
Wow, that was this was a staple. This is where they got their heat.
Yeah, every one of their guys to talk. I mean, just give me Bubba Ray, that's fine. But I don't need to hear from everybody else.
Do you not care to hear their...
Not even now. Oh. You should finish it, though.
Well, I think people want to know that Bubba was from the metropolitan section of Dudleyville. Billed at 350 pounds and drove Beulah's head into the mat so hard she didn't know if she should urinate, defecate, or ejaculate.
Uh-huh.
He was one for rhymes. And the baby faces then come out, all with ladders, and Joey says, they broke the neck of Beulah and the heart of Tommy Dreamer.
Hmm.
They broke his heart.
Yeah.
You want to talk about entrances going forever. The Sandman one, and I know this was a trademark of every ECW show. Jesus Christ, was it long. I don't know how many beers he had before this match, but it was a plenty, and I could only guess how many before this show, legitimately, he took in. But the match finally did begin with, like, 20 minutes to go on this pay-per-view. They got out there when there was, like, 45 left. That's how long some of this went. Dudley Boys and Big Dick against Dreamer, Sandman, and Spike Dudley. Dreamer and D-Von go for a series of near falls at the beginning, which made no sense to me in this blood feud. Let's go for some near falls. What if Dreamer had got him in like 10 seconds? Is that the end of the street fight? Has he got his advantage? He's won the feud?
Yeah.
Why would you go for a pin when you want to kill these guys?
He's humiliating. Humiliation via a loss is way worse.
Bubba goes to military press Spike to the floor, but Spike is able to land on top of him. Hits Bubba with 10 punches in the corner, then steps onto his shoulders and falls and takes a Bubba bomb, and they beat down Spike. He hits a Hurricane Ron and then a face plant as the crowd just roared here for Spike as he fought back. Big Dick here,
who pass away only a couple years after this. Billed at 360 pounds, which I would guess would be a bit of an overstatement here. 360 is a... This man did not look 360.
Dense muscle.
Maybe. Dreamer and Devon fought onto the chairs inside of the audience. Big Dick got sent into a guardrail. I hate saying that name over and over again. Spike then climbs this giant ladder, dives onto all three Dudleys on the floor. Crowd's going crazy here. Sandman hits a somersault senton off the top onto a ladder with Devon under it. Then Bubba comes back with a senton off the second turnbuckle to Dreamer with a ladder on top of him. Spike hits the acid drop to Bubba, but Devon makes the save. Then Devon and Spike, they're all bloody, hits a side slam to Spike on the ladder. Just some really big bumps here that everyone was taking. All the three Dudleys are set up in the Tree of Woe, and Dreamer applies a figure four to sign guy with his bad knee. And then Jeff Jones attacks Dreamer and ends up pile driving the Beulah doll, does the Dreamer pose, and then Dreamer hits Jeff Jones with his own pile driver. The three baby faces then join with referee Jim Molyneux, and all of them administer drop kicks with chairs to the Dudleys and Joel Gertner in the Tree of Woe position. Then Big Dick hits his power bomb, which is called Total Penetration, to Dreamer on top of a ladder. Then there's a cane shot to Big Dick, Bubba with a chair shot to Sandman's head. Then misses Bubba with a splash onto the ladder. Dreamer finally hits a DDT to Bubba onto the ladder, and Dreamer pins Bubba at 14:28, and they proclaim that Tommy Dreamer has got his revenge. But then immediately as he's celebrating, Jack Victory runs in, hits Dreamer with a guitar shot to the head. Everyone attacks him. New Jack's music hits. They comes out with a shopping cart full of weapons, and they end up laying out all the heels. There's a kendo stick, a nut shot to Victory, and then a guitar shot. And then Dreamer, Sandman, Spike, and New Jack, they all pose to the crowd as the show goes off the air, and the crowd is just wanting more. They love this show.
They did. They certainly did. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the main event?
Not as much as
just a big brawl.
Other matches. Yeah. I didn't really have the emotional attachment to the storyline or the characters that I think you know, was what drew a lot of people to like this. But certainly the atmosphere was there, and I mean, these guys got this far doing the type of wrestling that they've done, so. It, you know, what's the difference? But I thought it was one of the, not one of the better matches on the show, but overall as a show, this was perhaps maybe the best ECW show I've seen.
What would you give this one?
8.5. Yep.
I'll go 7. You know, a very great show for the time. An awesome crowd too, and some very great stuff on this show. So we'll dive into the feedback right now for those of you that had seen Heatwave, and we start off with Christian Small. I personally love this show and think it's one of the best ECW shows ever and easily their best pay-per-view. I find looking back at ECW shows, they don't really hold up much today, but this one really does. We got the usual Tanaka awesome spot fest, some great brawls, and some really good actual wrestling matches. But there's one thing that bugs me with this show, and that's the RVD Sabu versus Hayabusa Shinzaki match. While it wasn't a horrible match by any stretch of the imagination, I find most fans hold it up as this awesome must-see classic, and I just don't. Sabu was very clumsy as usual, and Hayabusa just seemed a little off, to be honest, but was still a good match and a good show. Would love to give this show 8 out of 10.
Tanise says, this show had everything good, in-ring action, strong characters, and a hot crowd to contend with. Plus, it didn't hurt that the show flew by quickly. The tag title match is one of my personal favorites. Even with some of their blown spots, everything worked. There was a rumor I heard that originally it was supposed to be Hayabusa instead of Masato Tanaka feuding with Mike Awesome. Just wanted to know if this is true. I really enjoyed the Taz Bigelow brawl, especially teasing the spot they did at Living Dangerously. I was entertained with the show from beginning to end, and I'm looking forward to your review, guys. Any truth to that? Hayabusa instead of Masato Tanaka feuding with Mike Awesome?
I don't know. I don't know the story, if that was true or not. We go on to the next one here. BB from the UK. Very excited for this week's review of this event. It's probably one of my all-time favorite pay-per-views. I haven't seen the show in years, though. I still hold it in high regard, and a number of things always come to mind that the crowd that night lost their shit for, including but not limited to, that's incredible, Tombstone pile driver off of the second turnbuckle, Candido super power bomb from the top rope, almost everything from the crazy Masato Tanaka Mike Awesome match, Van Damme almost killing Shinzaki with the botched leg drop from the top, and Taz and Bam Bam Bigelow going through the ramp. Also, I'm not sure how many many other events the combination of Styles and Douglas served for in the commentary booth, but I liked it and thought it worked. Shane was a good promo, and I think there was a certain degree of crossover in terms of skills required to pull off either role. The Scott Putski Award is probably a toss-up between Awesome and Candido, both rest in peace and looking insane on this show, so I'd be happy with either of those. Lastly, although I'm aware it might be the rose-tinted spectacles talking, I love the show and would give it a 9 out of 10.
B. Rice. What's up, guys? I just discovered your podcast a couple of months ago, and I've been hooked ever since. Heatwave 98 is often mentioned by ECW fans as the best pay-per-view of the company's run, which, besides Anarchy Rules 1999, is probably true. The first highlight I noticed of this pay-per-view was the production. Originally, I downloaded a live Malaysian TV rip of the show, and it turned out to be the best ECW event when it comes to picture quality. Judging by the crowd, I couldn't tell whether this was a wrestling event or the Family Values 98 tour. The male 18 and 35 demo was in full effect without a dame in sight. Six above average matches and no filler. Storm and Candido delivered and had some funny moments leading up to the match, especially when they were tag team champs on ECW TV and would often turn on each other during the match. Match of the night was easily RVD and Sabu versus Hayabusa and Shinzaki, with Mr. Monday Night and Sabu delivering some of the most violent, high-flying teamwork seen at that time. The main event was pretty good, as no one expected it to be a Mac clinic. The main highlight of the show, however, is Paul Heyman's booking for creating a great buzz for the show with the world champ on the shelf and the TV champ previously occupied. 9 Francine implants out of 10. On a side note, your guys' choice of music on podcasts is great. As a radio show host at the University of Richmond myself, it was great to hear Jay-Z and Ja Rule's Gangsta Shit, along with Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown's We Have Something in Common on previous podcasts. While many wrestling journalists' knowledge of rap and R&B doesn't go past Nelly, keep up the good work. Well, I gotta say, I hear a lot of compliments about the music on this podcast, and it's all John Pollock. This is all from the mind of DJ Jopo.
Well, when we go out to music, you pick as well.
Yeah, but that's on occasion. But I think for the most part, people really like what you do. Going into the show.
You have much more music cred than I do. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but that's... So what? What does that mean?
Oh, I'm just pointing out fact here. Jake from the UK.
Just take a compliment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Way. Like most people, I'm very nostalgic for ECW, and on paper, Heatwave is one hell of a stack card. However, watching some of the stuff back is very bittersweet, due mainly to the sheer violence on display and where some of these guys have ended up as a result. And I concur here with Jake, and that's why I kind of watched this with a conflicted reaction to it. Moving on to more positive things, the opener of Lynn Incredible was very good, if a bit messy. Nicole Bass nut shots, etc. But had a great finish with Credible hitting That's Incredible off the second turnbuckle. I really wasn't into Candido Storm. It was decent enough, but to me it had virtually the same finish as the opener. Awesome and Tanaka was predictably mental, but I think I've seen better from these two, especially the match from One Night Stand. Actually, this is the match where I started to struggle. Some of the chair shots and bumps were really scary, and I'm seriously surprised Masato Tanaka is still alive today. God bless him. One thing that I was really excited about on this show was seeing Hayabusa in ECW, but my god, this match dragged. It was pretty much a spot fest and a sloppy, poorly paced one at that. The term car crash comes to mind when describing this match. You just have to keep watching. The novelty of Hayabusa in an ECW ring was still a cool visual, though. Taz and Bigelow had a fun brawl, and I've seen hundreds of times, but that ramp shot spot is so iconic, you really can't go wrong. Main event was probably the only real letdown on the pay-per-view. Aces and Eights, I mean the Dudley Boys, against Dreamer, Sandman, and Spike seemed like a weird choice to close the show, but it was okay. Your standard multi-man weapons match followed by Jack Victory and New Jack getting their shit in. Were they feuding over the name Jack? Anyway, this was an enjoyable show. Some really wild wrestling and great characters made this pay-per-view easy to watch. My Scott Putski goes to Nicole Bass. Enough said. Some call this ECW's greatest pay-per-view. I haven't seen enough shows to give it that accolade, but it's definitely a solid 8 out of 10.
Paul Ellett from the UK. Definitely a case of less is more on the show. At just 6 matches. Sorry, I was interrupted by a phone call.
I thought that was all his feedback.
Yeah. A really enjoyable pay-per-view with a little of everything. Like many ECW shows, matches flow into each other nicely, and I can quite easily watch the whole thing in one sitting. I know Heyman narrated the promo videos, most likely to save on expenses, but he sold Storm and Candido's story like it was Sean turning on Marty. Like a lot of ECW as well as the main feuds, there seem to be a few feature programs being quietly teased too. For instance, Sabu stealing the pin from Van Damme in the Candido Storm video package, it felt like the stuff was always happening, and even as talent came and left, ECW always seemed to do a good job of quickly recovering. Quick question, what did you think of the ECW VHS and DVD covers? They always seem to split people I spoke to. I found the use of bright colors for a very gritty product really interesting. They had almost a comic book feel to them. While I ask, John and Wei, what is your favorite wrestling DVD or VHS cover?
Oh, geez. One that comes to mind right away for me is that Invasion one with Vince and Shane's faces. Joined together. I always liked that one. I mean, there were some great ones over the years.
I've always enjoyed the Royal Rumble from the early 90s.
Yeah.
Painted posters and the covers by Joe Jusco, which our friend Brent Chittenden recently did an interview with.
Yeah, that would be up there for me as well.
I wasn't even aware that was like a comic book artist, but yeah, he did all those, and those are always classics. Just to see basically a snapshot of the entire roster for that whole year on one, you know, thing.
Yeah, I mean, the ECW ones, none really stand out to me that jump out.
I don't even know what most of them look like.
Yeah, they were just, you know, some random shots of guys, and, you know, they were kind of bright covers for most of them.
Let me look at this. Let me look at this Heat Wave 1998. I'll give you my opinion right now.
Okay. It's got, like, Sandman on it, and
here it is. It's fire. It's a man on fire.
Well, it's Heat Wave. Oh, that's not the one for this particular event, I think. Did you just type in Heatwave?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Type in 98.
Yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah, it's just a photo of Sandman, Candido, and Tanaka.
Nothing crazy. Okay. All right. Well, that wraps up our feedback there. That's some of our favorite covers. Good question. As we get on out of here, looking ahead to next week, Wei, are we going to review what we had discussed, or do you want to do something different? Okay. Next week, we are going to take a look. We're going back to another documentary already. We're going to chat the brand new Mick Foley DVD for All Mankind, the life and career of Mick Foley. That will be our chat discussion for next week. Pretty lengthy documentary. I have begun to watch it. Wei will check it out as well. Next week we shall discuss. They brought in a lot of people to be interviewed for this project, and it's got a lot of great reviews. So I'm looking forward to watching the rest of that later on this week. We'll put the feedback thread up as well. You have until Friday when we will announce the winner of our new caption contest to caption Wei Ting directing in the studio at Fight Network. We've already got some great captions, and the winner will get a copy of the 2012 Survivor Series from E1 Entertainment along with a lost sticker. So get your captions in, and we'll announce the winner on Friday on Review and Impact.
When did you take this picture?
While I was sitting here, and it was on the screen.
I didn't even know.
Yep. So that is up there right now. In the meantime, The Law is up from this past Sunday, featuring part one with Bob Holly. Part two is going to air this weekend as well. Review a Raw from Monday night, a show I thought was better paced than last week's. Wade disagreed. And then, of course, Review and Impact later this week. Part two with Bob Holly, as I mentioned, is this coming weekend. New edition of the MMA Report. Lots of stuff coming your Wei. So go head on over to liveaudiowrestling.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Follow at Wei0937, at Law Radio. Any parting words, Wei?
Enjoy.
Enjoy. That's what we want you to do. All right. We're going to get on out of here. Mr. Ting, why don't you drop some credibility on us and give us some music to go out with?
I picked last week.
Oh, did you pick next week? Last week? All right. Well, you know, in the spirit of this show, which I'm sure a lot of people saw, a lot of, you know, a power bomb off the top rope, that's incredible, off the second turnbuckle. Some chair shots to the head. Let's go out with some Wu-Tang. Protect Your Neck.
Oh,
to put a capsule here on this Heat Wave pay-per-view. And we'll chat with you later on this week. The Hellraiser, raising hell with the flavor. Terrorize the jam like troops in Pakistan. Swinging through your town like your neighborhood Spider-Man. So all tick-tock and keep ticking. When I get you flipping off the shit, I'm kicking. The Lone Ranger, co-ed, danger. Deep in the dark with the art to rip the charts apart. The vandal, too hot to handle your battle. You're saying goodbye like Devin Campbell. Rough neck, Inspector Dex on the set. The rebel, I make more noise than heavy metal. The way I make the crowd go wild. Sit back, relax, won't smile. Ray got it going on, pal. Call me the rap assassinator. Rhymes rugged and built like Schwarzenegger. And I'ma get mad deep like a threat. Blow up your project, then take
take all your assets, cause I came to shape the frame in half with the thoughts that bomb, shit like math. So if you wanna try to flip, yo, flip on the next man, cause I'll grab the clip and pitch it with 16 shots and more I got, going to war with the melting pot.
It's the Method Man for short, Mr. Map. Move it on your left, and set it off, get it off, let it off like a cat. I wanna break food, cop me back. Small change, they putting shame in the game. I take game and blow that nigga out the frame. And like fame, my style will live forever. It's crossing over like they don't know no better. But I do, true, can I get a sue? Not respect due to the 1-6, ooh, I mean, oh. Yo, check out the phone like the Hudson or PCP. When I'm dusting, it's off because I'm hot like sauce. The smoke from the lyrical blood make me
ooh, grab my nut, get screwed.
Ow!
Here comes my Shaolin style. Truth, B, A, B, B, Y, U. To my crew with the.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, baby, baby, come on. Baby, come on, baby, baby, come on.
Yo, you best to check your neck.
First things first, man. You with the worst. I'll be sticking pins in your head like a nurse. I'll attack any slack in this mat. Come fully packed with the fat brother stack. Same on you when you step through. Two, the old dirty bastard, straight from the Brooklyn Zoo. And I'll be damned if I let any man come to my center. You enter the winter, straight up and down. That shit, damn, you can't slam. Don't let me get fooled on me, man. The old dirty bastard is dirty and stinking. They saw unique rolling with the knife of the creeps. They be rolling with a stab. Ain't saying gas, bite my style. I fight your mother.
My style is wild, so book me. Not long is how long that this rhyme took me. Ejecting styles from my lethal weapon. My pen that rocks from here to Oregon. Here's more again. Catch it like a psycho flashback. I love gats. Rap was a gun. You wouldn't bust back. I go with shit, all types and shapes and sounds. And wherever I lounge is my stomping grounds. I give an order to my peeps across the water to go and snatch up props all around the border. And get far like a shooting star. It's who I are. It's living on the life. Apollo Escobar. Point blank as I kick the square biz. There it is, your fucking pros and it goes.
Yo, chill with the feedback block, we don't need that. It's 10 o'clock, ho, where the f*** you see that? Feeling mad hostile, ran out apostle. Throwing like Christ when I speaks the gospel. Stroll with the holy roll, then attack the globe with the buckets. Style, the ruckus, 10 times 10 men committing mad sin. Turn the other cheek and I'll break your f***ing chin. Slain boom bangs like African drums.
LB.
Coming around a mountain when I come. Crazy flamboyant for the rap enjoyment. My plan increased like black unemployment. Yeah, another one there. Took a genius, take us the f*** out of here.
The woo is too slamming for these coke killer labels. So ain't had hit since I seen Aunt Mabel. Be doing all the sinning like Cain did Abel. Now they money's getting stuck to the gum under the table. That's what you get when you misuse what I invent. Your empire falls and you lose every cent. But trying to blow up a scrub. Now that thought is just as bright as a 20 watt light bulb. Should've pumped it when I rocked it. It's so stingy, they got short arms and deep pockets. This goes on in some companies with majors. They're scared to death to pump these. First of all, who's your A&R? A mountain climber who plays an electric guitar. But he don't know the meaning of dope when he's looking for a suit and tie. Rap that's cleaner than a bar soap. And I'm the dirtiest thing in sight. Matter of fact, bring out the girls and let's have a mud fight.
You best protect your neck.